What if everything you believe about yourself is wrong? Not slightly off, but fundamentally mistaken. Most of us walk through life convinced we possess some unchanging essence, a core me that's remained constant since childhood, that will persist until death, that makes us uniquely ourselves. We feel it so strongly that questioning it seems absurd. Yet this feeling, powerful as it is, turns out to be one of the most elaborate tricks our minds play on us. This isn't just philosophical wordplay. Understanding what we really are and what we're not changes how we face aging, loss, relationships, even death itself. It explains why brain injuries can transform personalities overnight, why dementia devastates families in such complex ways, and why our memories can't be trusted to tell us who we've been. We instinctively believe in what might be called the pearl view of identity, the notion that buried somewhere within us lies a hard, unchanging core that constitutes our true self. Strip away everything else, and this essence remains. But where exactly would we find this pearl? The question, "Who am I?" sounds simple. The answer rewrites everything. Perhaps our essence lies in our bodies? Thought experiments suggest otherwise. If you woke tomorrow in someone else's body with all your memories intact, you'd still be you, just trapped in the wrong vehicle. Transgender experiences provide real-world evidence. Jana Mitra, assigned male at birth, spent 12 years living as a man to meet Buddhist ordination requirements. During an intensive meditation retreat, she hoped spiritual practice might resolve her gender dysphoria. Instead, she discovered it remained absolutely steady, unchangeable. Her eventual return to living as a woman wasn't a choice, but recognition of something fundamental. Other cases deepen the mystery. Katie Piper, whose face was destroyed in an acid attack, initially felt the old Katie was gone, yet fundamentally remained herself. Historian Tony Jutt developed ALS and became completely paralyzed, unable to move anything but his eyes, yet remained unmistakably himself despite his body becoming a prison. These cases reveal something crucial. While we depend tragically on our bodies, our identities are determined primarily by the mental life they enable. We can be reduced almost entirely to our psychological selves and still persist. This suggests our essence might lie in one particular part of our physical being, the brain. But even this seemingly obvious answer unravels under closer examination. In 1982, Suzanne Siegel's sense of self vanished while waiting for a Paris bus. She reinterpreted this as spiritual enlightenment and became a teacher. Then came seizures and headaches. In 1997, she died from a brain tumor. Her awakening was likely neurological damage. Modern neuroscience has abandoned searching for a central self-center. There's no master control room. Instead, the self emerges from multiple brain systems working together, what neuroscientist Todd Feinberg calls a nested hierarchy. Split-brain patients can house two different consciousnesses. People with Cotard syndrome believe they don't exist. Phineas Gage's personality transformed after an iron rod destroyed part of his frontal lobe. Perhaps memory stitches the self together, but memories aren't recordings. They're reconstructed each time we recall them. Psychologist Elizabeth Loftus has shown how easily false memories can be implanted. We construct our sense of self from memories and construct memories to fit our sense of self. HM's case reveals memory's crucial yet insufficient role. After 1953 brain surgery, he lost the ability to form new memories for 55 years. His self froze at age 27. Robert, whose wife Linda has dementia, calls himself half a widower, mourning who she was while visiting who she's become. Persian philosopher Avicenna proposed imagining being created without sensory perception, falling through space feeling nothing. Most intuit they'd still exist, proving non-material souls exist. But this intuition misleads. Can we truly imagine having no body, or merely imagine not being aware of it? Language encourages the error. Since mind is a noun, we assume it must be a thing. Yet many nouns aren't physical objects without being ghostly entities. Love isn't a physical object, yet it's not a ghost. Songs exist, but not separate from the sounds composing them. Oxford theologian Richard Swinburne offers a more sophisticated defense through split brain research. Imagine your brain hemispheres transplanted into two bodies, rightian and leftian. Both wake claiming to be you, with identical memories and personalities. Which one actually is you? Most philosophers agree neither can be you, since choosing one would be arbitrary. But Swinburne insists one must be you, though we can't know which. Since physical facts can't determine this, he argues non-physical souls must exist. This makes questionable leaps. It assumes there must be a further fact about which person is you beyond all physical and psychological facts. But nations are more than the sum of their parts without requiring mysterious nation souls. Similarly, persons needn't have additional non-physical components. Without a unified self, we're constructions. Robert B. Oxnam discovered through therapy that he contained 11 distinct personalities. Bobby the Imp, Tommy the Angry Young Man, Wanda the Kind Woman, all taking control without his awareness. Dissociative identity disorder remains controversial, with experts debating whether childhood trauma creates separate personalities or therapists inadvertently suggest them. Regardless, DID challenges the Pearl view. Think of the brain as computer hardware, with alters like user profiles accessing different memories, multiple users of one system. Yet most resist radical multiplicity. Brooke McNaughty, who lived as both academic and belle de jour escort, rejects being different people. She maintained separate identities by suppressing some things and bringing other things to the fore. We all do this, behaving differently with parents than friends, at work than home. The social dimension proves crucial. For transgender individuals like Drew Marland, transition was partly about treatment. If you are perceived as being male, then people will treat you as a male, and that is different to the way that I wanted to be treated. Shakespeare wrote that all the world's a stage, but stripping away all roles leaves nothing. We're always in some environment. Even solitude doesn't reveal our true selves. In private, we indulge self-delusions, while interactions force accuracy. We're bundles existing in relation to others. We are bundles, collections of experiences, memories, and processes in constant flux. David Hume observed, "We never encounter a self separate from our perceptions. We are collections of experiences, not a thing having experiences." The evidence supports this. People with Cotard syndrome have coherent experiences without a stable sense of self. Research shows we sometimes dream without any self present. The unity we experience isn't caused by an underlying unified thing. It's how a complicated bundle of mental events creates a singular sense of self. We are no more than, but more than just, matter. We consist solely of physical stuff, yet describing a person requires more than physical vocabulary. Mental events emerge from physical ones without being identical to them. As neuroscientist Todd Feinberg puts it, your life is what your particular pack of cells collectively do, though you can't observe or bottle a life. In this sense, I is a verb dressed as a noun. The unity of self is so compelling, we naturally think of ourselves as beings with clear boundaries. This is the deepest aspect of the ego trick. We are fluid, ever-changing, amorphous selves. While it's usually easy to say we remain the same as we age, early childhood or dementia reveal this isn't always true. The boundaries of selfhood are fuzzy, not sharp. The ego trick isn't that we don't exist, it's that we believe ourselves more substantial and enduring than we are. Like seeing a cloud as solid when it's actually water droplets, we mistake our nature without it being an illusion. Philosopher Derek Parfit describes adopting the bundle theory. My life seemed like a glass tunnel through which I was moving faster every year, and at the end of which there was darkness. When I changed my view, the walls of my glass tunnel disappeared. I now live in the open air. The bundle view dissolves rigid boundaries between self and others. This transforms our relationship with mortality. The person you'll be in 30 years shares some continuity with you, but with different memories, body, and concerns. Even immortality wouldn't preserve our current selves. We inevitably change beyond recognition. Character traits aren't absolute essences, but situational patterns. An affable person can be withdrawn, a brave firefighter occasionally paralyzed by fear. Many blameless German citizens revealed darker selves under the Third Reich. What gives our lives meaning if we're constantly changing? Philosopher Christine Korsgaard argues the connections that matter most come from our actions and choices. We promise to make ourselves into good spouses or parents. Agency builds the unity of self over time. Understanding ourselves as bundles doesn't diminish us. It reveals something more remarkable. We're messy, complicated, ever-changing collections, creating the vivid sense of being someone. The ego trick isn't a deception to lament, but a marvel to appreciate.